right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
And Sean, we've got a guest joining us shortly.
We do.
Here in about 5 minutes, he'll be coming on.
A very persuasive guest,
yes,
too.
Yes, very persuasive.
You could say he's written a book on persuasion, or a book on persuasion.
A book, yes, a book.
A book, yeah. And we will be talking about this. And it's one both of us have had around for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally the pages on mine are a little bit yellowed. So I've had this for a while. I don't know how old the book is. So it was kind of cool going back through it and seeing like my old highlights, my old tabs and marks, mm-hmm. and dog ears and things like that. So we'll be talking to James Speakman.
Yes.
James. And he's got some other cool stuff he's up to as well that we'll touch on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's on the line, so we're just going to bring him on because
all right.
I'm not sure if he's got a beverage or not, but he's going to join us. I think he does. I see him shaking his head in the green room like he's got a beverage.
It's like, hurry up. I want to crack this thing open.
How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for coming on today, man. We were just talking about you. Wasn't sure you would have a Friday afternoon. I'm not sure what time zone are you in right now?
Eastern time zone.
Oh, okay. So it's almost beer time or beverage time for you. In your neck of the woods. So, yeah, thanks for coming on today. We want to get into your book, Covert Persuasion, and a few other things that you're working on. By the way, I don't know if you're responsible for the Patriot software ads, but I used to listen to those on XM when I hear those. Those are really memorable. So we'll have to talk about those as well.
You can definitely touch on that as well. That's a phenomenal company. Unbelievable.
I gotta think that those as long as those ads have run, it's got to be successful. They've got to be effective.
Yeah. And they do a lot of other things too. And I'm relatively new to that company, but I can fill you in on what they do.
Sure.
And how persuasion leaks into their efforts too. So
absolutely.
Okay. That's cool. It looks like you're joining us from the book cave.
I gotta tell you, with work from home, which is the entire Patriot company is working from home, as mm-hmm. most of the country is. And this background, it's kind of funny because I can show you a little bit more.
That is quite the book. Look at you.
Much more all the way down here. And then the table that I'm standing at is a table that has books underneath.
Wow.
And then I've got some over there too, which, it's just the crazy side of me that gets shown off whenever there's a Zoom meeting or anything like that, where people are saying, okay, now, is that background real? And I can touch these books and pull them off. And we moved into this house not too long ago, and uh-huh. I've got twin 8-year-old girls. And as they saw this thing start to take shape, they're like, you haven't read all these. Have you read all these? I'm like, yes, I have. And I said, we can get into it later, but I've learned a photo read.
Yeah.
Go through books extremely quick. I can pull a lot out of them very fast. And so they would occasionally quiz me, and they're 8, so the questions are pretty easy. But basically, I said, pull one of these off, fan through it, and you'll see that if it's one of the really good ones, it's going to have highlights in it, marks in it, notes in the margin, all of that kind of
stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. See, I've got your book here, and I've got it dog-eared, underlined. I've got highlights. Yep. I mean, we've worn this thing out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a huge effort that I didn't, I'd never done one previously. Mm-hmm. I can get into how I met Kevin Hogan. That's an interesting story too. But it's one of those things where I had been accumulating things for a very long time, mm-hmm. reading a ton, trying things in person to see, does this really work? Because I am very skeptical of everyone's claim of do this and you get instant compliance and do this. Yeah, well, I would test almost everything out. And so years of that went by, and one thing led to another, and this became a reality. But we can get into that as you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's get into some pints first, and then we'll jump into the persuasion part of the show. So, so today we usually let our guests go first. So, Jim, if you've got a beverage, whatever it is,
well, you know, I do, and I got to tell you because I saw the interview you did with Doberman Dan, I kind of I'm on the same track as him. I'm not a huge beer drinker, sure, but there's one that I do like, and it's seasonal. Mm-hmm. And it's not out yet. I mean, I have a regular Bud Light here, which is no big deal. In fact, I had to go search through the refrigerator to find that because, well, luckily I had one. So I have one here, but there's one that I like. It's called Great Lakes Christmas Ale.
Mm. Okay.
Have you guys ever had that?
I have not had that one.
It only comes out like
it's a season, around
October. Yep. And it sells out all the time everywhere. It's something to look forward to. Also, I think if they had it out all the time, I wouldn't think it's that special. So right, there's right, a little scarcity involved there, you know, and all these little things play in. Yep. But that one I'm looking forward to coming out, but I don't have that yet. So I've got the regular old standby Bud Light.
Sounds good. Well, yes, Shiner here in Texas, I'm in Austin, mm-hmm, has a Christmas ale that's really good. I think we did that one last year, or I did that one last year. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the cool thing. Like, you know, depending on where our guests are from, you know, there's the craft breweries that are only in that region. Jonathan's in Knoxville. I'm in Texas. So, but I've signed up for the Original Craft Beer Club, which is our sponsor. And so every month I get four new beers, three of each of four new beers from who knows where. So I'll be featuring one of those today. So I've got from the good old, so that's the Original Craft Beer Club. What's really cool is I just signed up, and in the first case, they sent all kinds of like goodies, you know, because I signed up for the subscription plan. Mm-hmm. So I got like these really cool like huggies, you know, koozies, whatever you call them, depending on the part of the country you're in, with all the like memes on them. So that alone's worth the first subscription right there.
Very cool.
And then they send you these newsletters that tell you about the beer, about the brewery, and then they also have trivia on them. So kind of a cool package that you get every year. So I'm going to be talking today. I'm having the Dragonfly IPA. So here's the bottle.
There you go.
And it is,
with the worst to get that over with, right?
Well, we'll find out. Yeah, we'll find out. So it says, the Dragonfly IPA, it's 6.7% alcohol by volume. Upland, so the brewery is Upland Brewing Company from Bloomington, Indiana. So Upland's Dragonfly IPA is true to the classic style of this ale. Not a good start for me, but featuring seven hop additions to create a powerful hop profile. Going downhill fast for me.
Yes.
I'm more of a stout porter guy. But anyway, a solid malt base, however, tempers the bitter American hops, giving Dragonfly IPA a balance not often found in this style. So there is hope. And the end product is a well-balanced malty beer with a crisp taste of hops and an exceptionally floral nose. Dragonfly is Upland's most popular beer, serving as an introduction to craft beer for many and longstanding favorite for many more. So that's what I've got today. So I'm going to crack that open, Jonathan, while you tell us what you've got.
Okay. I have an Untitled Art Malted Milk Stout.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah.
As I pour my IPA.
Yes. Your IPA and against my milk stout. I couldn't find a whole lot about this. You know, I looked it up online, but it is 8% ABV. I don't know too much about the brewer that does this, so I guess I'm just going to have to judge it by taste alone on this one.
Yeah, no copy to persuade you.
Jim, you've got the. Did you say you had a? Was it a Bud Light?
Yeah, it's a Bud Light Lime. I'm waiting for that Great Lakes Christmas Ale to come out because that is the one that, I mean, everybody around here, the restaurants get it, sell out of it quickly. The grocery stores get it, sell out of it quickly. When you see it, you buy the whole case. You don't just
oh, know, sure.
get, Yeah. You may not get another one. So, it's really, really popular around here. Very good. So looking forward to that.
All right. Quick trivia real quick, Jonathan.
Okay.
Since you've got a dark beer and I've got a lighter beer and Jim's got a super light beer.
Mm-hmm. Very dark.
So do darker beers have higher alcohol content than lighter beers?
I would say, what do you think, Jim? I would say no.
I would say yes.
Really? Okay. Not always.
Although many people assume that darker beers have a higher alcohol content than lighter beers, the truth is that a beer's color has nothing to do with its strength. The color of a beer depends on the type of grain it was made from. The alcohol content is determined by the amount of grain. So the sugars in the starch, the grain, convert to alcohol during fermentation, and thus the more grain, the higher the final alcohol content will be. So there's
Wanted to say dark, but I thought, you know, I'm going to play devil's advocate and go against that because it's always the opposite answer that you think is.
Right, because the way the question framed it. So that's the way you took tests in school, right?
Exactly. This is too easy, so I'm going to go opposite.
Yeah, sort of like coffee, because coffee, the darker the brew, you'd think it has more caffeine in it. Not true.
Right.
The lower roast has more caffeine in it. So exactly. It's a little bit counterintuitive. That's true.
Yeah, it has more flavor, but less caffeine in the darker, typically. Right. So, all right, well, good stuff let's give it a taste. So cheers, everybody.
Wow.
Man, that tastes like a basket of flowers.
So is Bud Light, is that kind of a, you said that's kind of just an every now and then you'll get something like that. So it's nothing special for you. And then,
it's not the go-to thing. Usually it's more like red wine.
Yep.
Dinner. That's you know, what I enjoy.
What particular blend or type of wine do you lean towards? Reds, whites, and then what within that? What do you like?
Yeah, usually reds. Reds almost all the time, and then it's usually Merlot is the red that I like. It's a little drier. Mm-hmm. But not always. I mean, some of the blends are good. Yeah, so I'm not particular. So some of the blends are a little smoother and nicer, but usually the Merlot is the go-to. Yep.
Yeah.
Do you like these new bourbon barrel blends?
I've had one. I can't remember the label of that. And it was, I didn't know what to expect. And I kind of liked it. It was kind of a good mix. It wasn't something that I would think that I would mix together.
Sure.
Going along that counterintuitive line, it's something that strange combination. So, but it wasn't bad. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny how those different flavors, you know, they seem really weird when you hear them. You see these on like the cooking shows and, you know, like when I make grilled cheese sandwiches now, I always put like some type of fruit on it when I do the grilled cheese sandwich, because it fry the fruit up a little bit, lets some of the sugars out.
Oh yeah.
It's nice. Like a slice of apple or something like that. It's really good. So, So Jonathan, real quick, your rating out of 5 pints, what'd you think?
I got to give this one about a 1.8. Just not a fan. A little way too sweet for me.
Oh, okay.
Way too sweet. So yeah, I just, it's
more of a liqueur almost going down that road. Yeah. Some of those dark ones are like that, man. They just get syrupy sweet.
Yeah. Maybe during the colder months, it would be ideal, but it's just not something you want, you know, during a hot summer when it's 90 to 100 degrees outside.
Yeah. Coming off a workout. Yeah.
That's right.
So I'm going to give mine like a 2.5.
Okay.
Probably if you like IPAs, it'd be higher, but I just can't ever get past that like really floral taste on the IPAs. I will say it's not bitter.
Yep.
It's smooth finish, but it's just got that punch in your nose and throat and face of that floral that I just don't love. So, it's all right. Fall is coming.
Let me ask you something about when you guys do this.
Yeah.
Do you now have to finish it? Cause if it's both of you don't like it. So I'm thinking, do you have to just like, you have to down that whole thing to finish it. And then only then can you have anything else, water, anything else. So you must finish that. Okay.
Yeah. Must.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Sometimes a beer starts off bad, but it can get,
once
it airs out, it actually can get a little better, but the initial, you know, that initial sip is what we judge it off of. But, you know, beers have been known to get better over time once they air out a little, but,
Especially like the peanut butter styles, those kind of, they really need some time to breathe, kind of like a red wine. And some of these beers the same way. And also, as we learned in our trivia last week, sometimes they're too cold and the flavors aren't released until they get up to about, what do we say, 45 to 55 degrees. Again, a lot like wine. So what do you give your old microbrew Bud Light lime there?
Is there a reason to rate that? I mean, there's really no reason to do that. It's right in the middle, I guess. I mean, it's certainly not something that you would go, wow, I need more of that.
Sure. But, I would probably prefer that. I'd probably prefer that over an IPA right now. So,
well, there you go.
Nope. So yeah, good old lager. It's hard to go wrong with a good lager. So
that's right.
All right. Well, that's our beer segment. So,
let me introduce Jim to our audience for those who may be just coming on to the show. So Jim, and I want to say you go by, I know your book says James, but you typically go by Jim, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Jim is.
Okay. So we've got Jim Speakman. He is the co-author of a book that Sean and I have had for a number of years called Covert Persuasion. Jim has over two decades of experience in advertising, and he is also the VP of marketing at Patriot Software. We'll be talking a little bit about that because, as I was mentioning at the beginning, they do some really clever stuff in their marketing. But you've got an extensive background in persuasion to advance products and services with a number of businesses. So you've been doing this for years, and Jim, it's a pleasure to have you on. We got to give you some advance applause.
Yeah, there you go. I can be done now. Thank you very much.
That's right.
While they're clapping. Yes.
It is live canned applause. Live canned applause.
The best kind. Always reliable. Yes.
So, just to start out, tell us a little bit before we get into the book. Why don't you give us a little background of yourself? Kind of your history. Give our listeners a little background of, because I know this book's probably 15 years old, right? It goes back about 15 years.
2006. So it's been a few years. And, you know, just to give you an overall snapshot of kind of why that even came to be, forget what its content is at the moment, but why it even happened. It goes back really to my dad. My dad was vice president of sales for a company for 43 years. And that's unheard of now because most people hop around. I'm an example of somebody who hopped around a little bit. But I remember growing up, Dad would have all those tapes in his car, Zig Ziglar, all the ones that are like, you know, Power of Selling, Tom Hopkins, all these different. And every time we'd go somewhere, those would be on. There'd be no radio on. I'm like, Dad, this is dumb. This is boring. I don't want to hear this.
Right.
But he would go, no, you want to hear this. This is good stuff. And he would constantly like put stuff in his mind that would make him better at what he did. And his whole career was that. So we had that constantly. Then fast forward a little bit of time, and I go through this phase where I think books are decorations and I don't want to read any of them. So that was through part of school. And then my mom was always an avid reader. Just there were books all over the house. Not books that I would necessarily read, but they were a fixture of the house. Still no interest. All through high school, only read things if I was forced to. Didn't like it one bit. College, of course, you have to read a lot. And then I'm starting to get curious about that age, about why are people making these choices? Just all kinds of things. What car you buy, what clothes you wear, what place you go, what you're interested in. Because that was a big thing. Everybody's trying to figure out, what am I going to major in?
Yeah.
How do you know, like, what's, for lack of a better word, what's persuading you to choose a path? Like, how are you deciding? So that's really when things started to pick up of, how are people making decisions? What is it? Is there something somebody could say that could sway you? Because people would look around like, what are you going to major in? I don't know. What are you majoring in? Like, they want to hear the answer so that they can decide what they're going to major. It's so bizarre. So through college, then I struggled to read as much as I could and retain as much. And that was never very easy for me. Graduate, get into my first job. By the way, my major was in advertising. So Marketing 402, Martha Rogers, Bowling Green State University. She was phenomenally good. To this day, I can remember the senior project of what we did. And she said, this is 80% of your grade. And we were like mock ad agencies. So she split up the class into groups and we had to pitch a product. She brought in some local business people and they were deciding, you know, whose was the best. But I can still remember in the prep for that, she would say, if I can say so what to whatever it is you say, you fail.
That's great. I'm like,
wow. So that so what test has been in my head forever. So if somebody says, you know, you say something that you think is just fantastic and they go, so what? You know, even if they don't say it out loud, their body's going to tell you because if you listen and pay attention, you're going to see a shoulder shrug, you're going to see a sigh, you're going to see something.
Yeah.
So fast forward from that, after college, my first job is in radio. I'm selling radio advertising for the 800-pound gorilla AM-FM combo in our market. And I'm thinking advertising, you know, this is the greatest thing. Little lessons along the way. Like I would, it was a big station, but it was small enough that as the account executive, I'm convincing the car dealer that he should absolutely advertise and he doesn't want to. He thinks the radio doesn't work. I'm like, okay. So I tell my sales manager, I say, you know what? I'm getting all this feedback. Radio doesn't work. And he goes, tell you what, he goes, why don't you do this? Why don't you give it away for free? And I said, well, I can't do that. I can't give it away for free. And he goes, no, trust me, go down to the dealership and tell them, we're going to just give you a free commercial. And I said, well, clue me in before I go down there and do this, cause I'm going to feel like an idiot. And he goes, here's what you do. So he gave me the story. I go down to the dealership. I talk to the dealership owner and I say, look, I know you're not a fan of radio. I know you think it doesn't work, but we're going to give you a free one. But we're going to write it and we're going to control everything that it says. And we're going to say that, you know, the next 40 people who get to the dealership are going to get a key to one of the cars in this showroom. And one of the keys is going to start the car. And, you know, we're going to give away a car. And he said, I can't do that. And I said, why not? We're going to just air a radio ad. No one listens to that, right? And he goes, oh, no, people listen. I can't give away a car. Okay. This is one of my twin daughters who's asking me a question about absolutely can't wait. All right, I'll help you in a minute, honey. Okay. The joys of working at home, right?
Oh, yeah. That's great. Yep.
We go past that dealership saying, I can't do that, realizing the value of radio. That makes me more curious. And as I write more radio ads, the radio scripts that I wrote thousands of them. I just started to realize a little bit of human behavior in that. And this is, I'm fresh out of college. If I write the radio script and I take it to a business owner, I started to do something very specific. I would make a mistake on their phone number because the call to action at the end was always call 1-800, whatever.
Right.
I would make a mistake there. And I did that on purpose. So they could look at this thing and they could go, oh, well, you got this wrong. And they would correct it. I'm like, okay, is it okay now? Well, yeah, now it's okay. Perfect. So I got more yeses from that one technique than I thought, well, that can't be that easy. So then I started to play with all the other things I started to hear about. And that started to get me curious about what are the things that persuade people?
Right.
I mean, is there something else that I could do? So then I had this fairly long history in direct response marketing. And some of the names that I've been trained by, directly knew Gary Halbert, and they were trained by him. Trained is a strong word. They knew him because you guys know. But anyway, they knew him. I started to get into the company, and I started as a script writer in the call center. And so they said, hey, you've got a flair. You seem to be able to convert interest into a sale. Your scripts are working better than anything we've ever had. We think you might be able to write, they called it front-end copy. And at that time, it was full-page advertorial newspaper, primarily, and very complicated 6-to-9-way name match direct mail. I'm like, okay, well, I'll definitely give that a shot. And I said it that casually. I'm like, I'll give that a shot. And one of the guys said, there were two people, the owner of the company and his creative, I would say partner, business partner, creative genius. The two of them together were like a brain that you couldn't believe. They couldn't really do it separately, but when they wrote together, mm-hmm. they would argue like you couldn't believe. Argue over the meaning of one word. Crazy stories I have. So they said, well, they said, you can't just try this. You know, if you have an interest, we'll train you. You don't just, we're not going to put you in a room and say, write something. You're right, right. So far away from writing something, you have no idea. So they trained me for a very long time. And it was, they started with direct mail copy. And John, who was one of the guys who trained me, said, I would write some stuff down. Finally, I'd get this package started, right? And I would think it's pretty good. And so I'm thinking, okay, this is really, we all think it's pretty good, right? You fall in love yep. with your own copy, you know, yep. And you protect it too. So I walk in and I hand it to him and he's starting to read it at his desk. I said, well, what I mean there is, and he screamed at me and he said, I can't tell you what he said, but he screamed at me. And I said, what is that? And he goes, are you going to be at Martha and Bill's kitchen table when they're reading this? You can't speak for your copy. It's got to do all the speaking for your copy without you being there. Yep. So I almost didn't let you stay in the room while I read it. Because then he gets out his red pen. He empties the red pen. He goes, these are poison words. These are this. And I have all that training to this day. I kept every note that I ever made with him. With that company, and you're going to recognize the company as soon as I say what the products were. I joined that company when it had 50 employees and it had about $45-50 million in revenue. Mm-hmm. Advanced in the company to become chief of staff. So a second to the CEO and owner, went over all the executives there. That was another story. Love those guys. They're fantastic. We got it up to 1,350 employees and about $350 million.
Wow.
Now it's a shell of its former self. All the executives have left. The owner is gone. The company shrunk down to, I don't even know. I'm not even sure. I know it's around, but I'm not sure what it's doing. But the products, you'll remember the Amish built fireplace.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the products. We had a monetary division. We had the home products division, and then we had like a health, weight loss and joint relief division. So those three areas. We were on TV infomercials. We did direct mail in the millions. We did 600 newspapers in the span of 3 weeks when we did a rollout, all kinds of, you name it. We did it. So that was one set of experience. And there's, if you had a multi-hour podcast, I would be able to tell you stories that I probably shouldn't. And it would probably take a few more of those things you have in your hand right there, Sean, to mm-hmm. give.
I remember those old advertorials of the Amish in like papers like USA Today or. So, I mean, those are really famous.
I tried to do a spec assignment. They, when I first got into copy, I found out about it through AWAI and they have a job fair every year. So back in like 2005, 2006, which is probably still the heyday of that company, they had a booth at that job fair. And I remember them, all the USA Today pages laid out and all this kind of stuff. And I never did get a job there. So obviously still too new in my craft.
Sure.
But yeah, I always love those articles to this day. I mean, those advertorials and, they did just some money. Did they do like the silver coins and coin stuff too? Or yeah.
Yeah, we did presidential coins, state quarters. We did uncut sheets of real currency, like $4 right. bills still connected, fives, tens, like sheets of four bills still connected, bigger sheets too. We had a vault that had multiple millions of dollars in coin and currency on the property. That was an interesting thing because here's one little side story. We had, when the first presidential coin came out, the U.S. Mint obviously makes the coins. I was in contact with someone at the U.S. Mint and I said, hey, we're very interested in getting our hands on these first. Where are you going to show them off first? I said, Chicago Federal Building. I'm like, okay, great. So we got a group together. I got one of our staff photographers. I got a couple people with me. We took this 46-foot all black motor coach titled to the World Reserve Monetary Exchange, which was the name of that division. drove that to downtown Chicago, and we had a, I don't remember that detail, so I won't say it, but we drove it to downtown Chicago, federal building. As soon as we pulled up, the police had some, it just so happened, had some spaces blocked off directly in front of the federal building. As soon as we pulled up, I got out and I looked at the policeman who was directing some traffic and I said, "We need to park right here." And he goes, he looks at us and he goes, "Okay, no problem." Lets us park there. I thought, there's no way that works. Mm-hmm. So there's these little things where if you just say it with authority, with, you know, just a calm confidence.
Yeah.
"Hey, look, I need to park here." I didn't give him any reason. And there's the, that Loftus study in the book, actually, about people in line at a copier.
Yeah.
Because I need to make copies.
Yeah.
Because, and speaking of my 8-year-old daughters, they'll say why to an incessant degree. Why? And I find myself saying what those studies all proved, which is we are trained and brought up that because I said so is enough of an answer.
Yeah.
And if all you do is put because, I felt like at that time, and I was way deep into all of this stuff at that point, and I'm thinking, I'm going to say, because I see him and I see us kind of caught in traffic and I see my opportunity for the open spaces that definitely fit this bus. I'm like, I'm going to say I need to park here because we need to park here. And I thought, it sounds so stupid. I can't bring myself to say that. So all I did was I said, "We need to park right here." And then I stopped talking. He was like, okay. I'm like, so the little slices of things that happen along the way just make me think this stuff is amazing. So, so then, that was the direct response company. I then advanced to, or moved on to, the local newspaper, Kent Repository. They actually own 3 dailies owned by Gannett, since bought by USA Today. I was ad director there, had 20 or 30 sales reps, all selling different things and literally making up prices. If you think prices in newspapers are like, here's our rate card, we'll just shred that. It makes no difference. So, and all of the stuff, all the media that we would buy at the direct response company was all remnant, all of it. So we got rates that you wouldn't believe. USA Today rates that probably not very many other people ever got. But we were also in there consistently, so they could count on us. Their page cost was way lower than their stated rate card, obviously. So I'm at the newspaper. I am then, they said, "We need a rate increase." I'm like, what does that even mean? So I made up a new rate card that none of us followed. So anyway, I moved on from there to a company that does works with financial advisors across the country. So the financial advisors across the country are trying to persuade people to go to a seminar, learn the information, set an appointment, meet with the advisor, follow the process through to completed sales of either annuities or IULs or something like that.
Yep.
Matter of fact, I have 10 of these notebooks. These are just, I use these all the time. This is like book 9. I have 10 of these things that I fill up with all the kinds of things that I will just.
Wow. Look at that. That's pretty, pretty detailed. I wish I wrote that clean and clear. That's pretty amazing.
Direct mail product ideas, all kinds of stuff. So
That's cool.
And at the beginning of these, I'd actually have a table of contents that I would write down, where do I find those things? So that's how crazy note-taking, but that's how my brain works. So back up before all my positions, so to speak, I did learn one thing that makes this room a reality, which is how to photo read. I've gone through various things that try to attempt to tell you that you can read faster and you can retain it all. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever worked for me except photo reading.
And are you talking about like the actual name brand photo reading? That's
Paul Sheely's. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got it right back here on the.
Yep. I went to a Holiday Inn in, I think maybe Columbus or something. I'm in Canton where the Pro Football Hall of Fame is.
Yeah.
And I spent like 2 days learning that for 8 hours a day. That made a huge difference. I use it all the time too, obviously. So
how fast can you get through a book then? Give us an idea.
Well, it's because here
your standard, yeah, look not, like that.
And this is all tabbed up too. And I wrote this, so that's weird, but it is old enough now that I'll reference it back again. But if this, if this book was brand new to me, it's 222 pages or so, I would be able to read that in about 40 minutes.
Okay.
And that's doing a couple passes, right? You do the
And that would,
I know this isn't the topic, but like, what was it? You set the intention and then you go hit some of the high point, or you, there's like three or four steps, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, the five. And, okay. And those five are, and it's funny because one of the things you'll do is it's how your eyes read text, right? So you may think, and you've seen those paragraphs of text, I'm sure, where what they do is they leave the first and last letter of each word in place and they mix up all the middle letters of the word.
Yeah.
And if every word is done like that, you can read it perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy.
It is. We don't understand how our brains do this. And all I can tell you is that once you sort of figure out how all that works, you can go so much faster if you just trust yourself that you're getting it.
Yeah.
And do all five steps. If you just do the first one is you flip the pages at like one per second. And, you know, if that's all you do, then you're just flipping pages. It's not going to work. And that's what I think most people think it is. If they see me do it, they'll be like, are you done? No. I mean, it's a process where you can't be distracted by anything else. You're focused solely on this. You can go through it. And in about 40 minutes, I would get about 75% of that content. And if I wanted to like teach out of the book, I'd do another 40, 45 minutes. So in an hour to an hour and a half, I would have that book down enough that you would be able to ask me decent in-depth questions about it. Well, the only thing that doesn't work for me is if it's a novel, if it's like a story, it needs to be structured like a business book because that matters.
Right. Yeah.
And it's in the recall is much higher than if you just read it.
Yeah.
You know, like you can get through an audio book, you know, average audio book, 6 hours for most business books. You know, you play it at 1.5-2 times speed. You can get through in 3 hours, but you don't remember much of it. Mm-hmm. Like you remember some big highlights, but that's it.
Right.
So it probably triggers ideas more than it does you remember anything.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Yeah. And you have to, the intention is a good word, although it's not one of the five steps that is in this system, but that intention is everything. And that goes to like in my book, it's outcome-based thinking, right? It's what do you want to get out of it? And I think that is what is missing in almost every normal attempt, either whether we're talking about photo reading or trying to persuade somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're trying to persuade somebody. People are so interesting to me, that life is an experiment.
Yeah.
I can go to a restaurant and have a blast with somebody trying to figure out how can I get this kind of outcome. My girls are excellent at not only being the experiment, but also they're picking up on so much of this stuff too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
They're giving it back to me pretty good. I'm like, oh yeah.
My kids have picked up on the fake because, you know.
Oh yeah.
So they like that fake because all the time, and it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you're the son of a salesman. I'm the son of a salesman. We're both, you know, Jonathan. I don't know what your dad did, but
salesman.
I think that idea of persuasion and sales and marketing is very like catchy. It's very. I know a lot of other people have same careers as their parents, but there's something I think about when you realize it's about persuading humans and you see how big of a, I mean, you say in the first line of your book or the second line of your book, I think, or one of the early call out boxes, I guess. Yeah. Everything you know or have will have become or do experience, you will get with and through other people.
Yeah.
And then you say life is persuasion.
Yeah. Yes.
And like that line, that idea that life is persuasion is something, you know, as a copywriter myself and a coach, like to me, like it's fascinating how you can use words to literally create new worlds for people and radically change their lives. And that's all it is, actually. Like that's all, everything we have is just a creation of words that somebody's strung together. And, you know, it's just crazy. I have a business called Agency 2610, and it's 26 letters, 10 numbers, right? In the English language.
Interesting.
Anything you want to accomplish in life requires some mixture of those 26 letters and 10 numbers. Mm-hmm. You can have anything you want.
That is so cool. And you know, I love the fact that you said it's words, because there's stuff in this book that, I mean, I don't know where to go with that, because my brain firing on all cylinders here, because the words you use determine the feelings you feel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Most people will object to that. You guys are way into this subject, so you'll agree with it quickly, but most people will go, no, they don't. They made me feel X, whatever. They made me feel upset. Well, that's not true at all. There's an inside persuasion game and there's an exterior one. If I'm trying to persuade other people, I have to have what's inside here straightened out. And I have to know what I want in the end, outcome-based thinking again. But the inside game, the words I use to describe the event I experienced will change the feeling I get if I change the words I use.
Yeah.
So, and I'll tell, you can go back to Tony Robbins' transformational vocabulary. Noam Chomsky had it before him, transformational grammar. Everybody repackages the same stuff. It's just, can you use it to literally affect the way you feel in any given moment?
Yeah.
And I think there's two things that happen. If something you experience upsets you, you're going to knee jerk be upset. You're just going to be, you can't stop that. That quick reaction happens. Mm-hmm. So I let myself have that for a split second, literally just that quick. But then you have to ask, and there's so many models in all these books that say, well, what do you do next? You ask yourself questions. So there's like, why does this always happen to me? Well, does it always happen to you? Always? Forever? For all time without exception? I mean, I've trained myself to ask these questions internally so that I can deflect that stuff and realize that, okay, that was one situation, one off. It never happened before. It won't happen again, most likely. And what is it really doing? Why do I feel this way? Am I upset because I sort of agree with what happened and I'm disappointed in myself? Could I be challenged by it instead of upset by it? Could I be fascinated by it instead of angered? Could I use it somehow to propel me forward rather than use it to hurt somebody else? I mean, and all these questions fire so quickly in my head that I can start to quickly change my outlook. There's something that I constantly find myself drawing. It's in a lot of books, right? And I'm going to do it real quick here, and I'll just hold it up. I'm really good at stick figures, so
that's why I keep a whiteboard behind my desk.
Yeah, and I've got one in here. I've got two in here actually, but this kind of this kind of drawing right here, right? So this is the event that everybody. It's the event.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nobody sees the event for what it is. This person sees it through their filter.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They can't see it any other way. And then this person sees it through their filter. They can't see it any other way. So until, and that's like a fundamental understanding of how to persuade somebody, right? Because they're coming from their own filters. They can't, like when people say, well, that's as plain as day. That's what's true. I'm like, they're speaking a foreign language.
Yeah.
This goes back to Stephen Covey stuff, right? Seek first to understand and then be understood, right? If you don't understand the filter they're looking through, you'll never be able to persuade them effectively.
Right. Right. And what do you think the best way is to try to get that understanding?
Ask questions.
For sure. It's all 100% about that. And I would
add, ask questions that aren't leading questions.
Right.
Because then you're putting your filter on top of their filter. Right.
Asking questions to really understand, not to lead them in a certain direction.
Right. Because there are definitely different sets of questions, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a point where you can start leading, but in the beginning,
understand. Yeah.
Yeah. You're seeking to learn. Yeah. Yeah. Not like a trial lawyer trying to lead them down a certain, down a certain path.
No, but I've got books on cross-examination right over there too. and I think if I told you, you know what those Sterilite containers are, the big clear plastic things with the lids. I've got three of those full of research on just questions.
Wow.